This is Science Friday. I'm Ira Flatow. There were big dinosaurs like T-Rex and Ankylosaurus, and then there were supergiant dinosaurs like the behemoth unveiled this week, among the largest animals to have ever walked the Earth. This one weighing in at 65 tons, Dreadnoughtus, described this week by scientists as 85 feet long, and as I say, weighing as much as a Boeing 737, a true giant among giants. Kenneth Lacavara, Associate Professor of Paleontology and Geology at Drexel University in Philadelphia, was on the team that dug up its fossils. He joins us from WHYY. Welcome to Science Friday.
Thank you, Ira. It's nice to be back.
And this was a baby?
Well, I wouldn't say baby, but it wasn't done growing at the time of its death. We would call it a subadult, and we can tell from both in the shoulder area, the bones hadn't fused together like you would expect in an adult, and also by looking at a cross-section under a microscope of the bone cells themselves, which show no indication of any kind of cessation of growth.
Mm-hmm. What group, considering its size, what group does this belong to?
Well, the larger group that it fits into are the sauropod dinosaurs. Those are the long neck, long tail, four-legged herbivores, Brontosaurus, a.k.a. Apatosaurus. Within that, it's a titanosaur. And the titanosaurs are not the longest or the tallest dinosaurs ever, but they're the most massive.
And this one was found in Argentina, where a lot of those dinosaurs lived?
Yeah, but most of the dinosaurs that you may have heard of from Patagonia are from the northernmost part. Dreadnoughtus is from the southernmost part of Patagonia, down near Tierra del Fuego, where those fossils have received relatively little attention.
Tell us what it's like to dig up a bone this size and keep digging and digging and digging until you find the whole size of the bone.
Well, it's exciting and it's backbreaking. digging up sauropod dinosaurs isn't for everyone. And, we had to innovate some techniques to get these bones out of the ground because, you can't jack it one side with burlap and plaster and just flip these bones over and do the other side. You actually have to dig tunnels under the bones and wrap the burlap and plaster until you have the whole thing done without moving it. So it's a lot of hard work, and it took us four expeditions to get all 145 fossils out of the ground.
So you got almost a complete skeleton of this dinosaur, except the head was missing, right?
Yeah, and that's not uncommon with sauropod dinosaurs. In the case of Dreadnoughtus, it had a neck and head that were about 40 feet long. And you can imagine, you can't put much weight at the end of a 40-foot lever. And so big sauropods tend to have small heads. In the case of Dreadnoughtus, it's as big as a house, but its head would be about the size of a horse. And they're lightly built. They're not well sutured together. They have big air chambers within them. And after they die, their heads essentially pop off and we don't find them.
Now, why would a dinosaur, why would any animal grow to such a large size?
Well, that's a great question. And, the whys are hard in evolution. But if you look at it ecologically, if you have a lot of plant material, if you have a really big salad bowl, you can divide those resources into many smaller individuals or fewer very, very large individuals. It seems like sauropods, the big ones, were doing something interesting in that the eggs don't scale with adult body size. So a little Dreadnoughtus could easily run around on your desk. And so when they're small, they're occupying the niche of small herbivores. And then later in their life, they're medium-sized herbivores. And then later, they're these titanic herbivores. So they kind of hog all these ecological niches during their lifetime.
Does this herbivore live in the swampy, watery area also?
No. And, I'm sure there were some sauropods that had an affinity for coastlines and such. But these animals were perfectly capable of supporting themselves on dry land. And the sedimentology that we did at the site shows that it was a rolling forested terrain, a mix of conifers and broadleaf trees with meandering rivers that were prone to flooding, which had something to do with how this animal was maybe killed and then preserved.
I'm also wondering about the math, the physics of a body that gets that large, starting with elephants and larger. Isn't there a problem of an animal getting so massive it has trouble staying cool enough, dissipating the heat from inside its body?
Yeah, that's a great question. There are a couple of studies that show that there is a correspondence between internal body temperature and mass in living animals. And if you put Dreadnoughtus on that graph, 65 tons, it goes out to a temperature that would literally cook meat. Now, obviously, we know Dreadnoughtus was not cooking inside of its body. And these sauropod dinosaurs, especially the big ones, have all these remarkable mechanisms for shedding heat into the environment. And that long neck and long tail is part of that. That gives them a lot of surface area per volume. And then within their body, especially going down the vertebral column, they have a lot of what we call pneumatic invasions. They have these air pockets, these air bladders that go into the bone that are connected to the respiratory system, and it allows them to shed heat, to dump heat into their lungs, and then exhale that. So they have a tremendous capacity to regulate their body temperature in a semi-passive way.
So they didn't need to sit in the water and just get rid of it that way, is, I guess. Yeah, interesting.
No, it doesn't seem like that's the case.
Are there larger ones than this one out there?
There may well be. One in particular, Argentinosaurus, is very, very large, and it's likely that it's larger than Dreadnoughtus, although the mass estimates on that go from about where Dreadnoughtus is to well above. The issue with some of the really large ones is that they're primarily known from fragmentary remains. You can imagine a body the size of a house falling over on a hard surface somewhere. Very little of that dead animal is in contact with the earth. And so very few of the bones have a chance to make it into the fossil record before they're either scavenged or destroyed by the elements. And so in the case of Argentinosaurus, we know it primarily from a series of mid-back bones, some hip bones, and a lower limb bone. And there's no math in the literature that turns any of those bone elements into a mass. And in fact, for the most reliable estimate, you need to have the upper arm bone and the thigh bone, which we do for Dreadnoughtus. So using that method, Dreadnoughtus has the greatest calculable mass of any known land animal.
And being the size of, what, 7, 8, 9 T-Rexes, it wouldn't have any natural enemy. I mean, it could, it's not, that doesn't have the teeth to attack somebody, but its tail would fight them off?
One would think so. I think it would be a very, very bad idea to attack a large, healthy Dreadnoughtus. And so that led to the name. You know, I can't imagine anything that could seriously menace this beast in its own environment. And it evoked in my mind these turn of the last century steel battleships, the dreadnoughts, the first really big, you know, warships like that, which were essentially impervious at that time. Dreadnoughtus fears nothing.
Yeah, I'll bet. A tweet from Mark Wilkins says, "Do you know how long the lifespan of one of these animals was?"
We don't know that. With some dinosaurs, scientists see what look like growth rings in trees, and interpreting those is controversial. Some people would interpret those as annual rings. Some people would say, well, they're episodic, but what are those episodes? We don't see anything like that in the big sauropods, although ecologically it makes sense. If you're going to grow a big body, you know, you're not going to live for 6 years or 10 years. You're probably a long-lived animal, but we don't really know. It wouldn't surprise me if they lived to be 100 or more.
And you say that they moved around on their legs. They weren't floating, no need to float or anything like that.
That's right. They moved around on their legs. Think Imperial Walker from Star Wars. They were completely capable of supporting their body. And these titanosaurs in particular have what we call a wide gauge stance. And so they have their back legs kind of kicked out. They have a very broad chest, and it gives them this really stable platform. And I think that's important in the selection, the evolutionary selection of these animals, because when you weigh 65 tons, I mean, the bones of Dreadnoughtus are big and strong, and you look at the ribs, they're pretty amazing, but, you know, if you drop a Boeing 737 on their ribs, they're going to break. And so I think when you're 65 tons, the penalty for falling over might be death.
Not to mention what happens when you're mating at 65 tons.
Well, we don't know a whole lot about that, and it kind of staggers the imagination, actually. We don't know how they mated. The other thing is, how do they lay eggs? Are they able to kneel down? Otherwise, you're pushing an egg out of a two-story window, essentially.
I never thought of that. Yeah, wow. So these eggs came out with a shell, just like other dinosaurs, like birds and things like that?
They have shells, and sauropod eggs are, you know, a little bit bigger than maybe an ostrich egg. They, as I said, they don't scale with the individuals. But in the case of these animals, they're mostly known from single individuals, and most of those are incomplete. So we know next to nothing about their social structures and behaviors like that.
It would seem like it would take up a lot of food to feed a body that size. Is it constantly eating all day long just to stay in shape?
Well, you would have to think it had a lifelong obsession with eating. Yeah, absolutely. You know, to grow to be 65 tons, what that represents is a tremendous surplus in calories between what it takes in and what it burns. And again, they have all these efficiencies built into their body. That long neck enables a big sauropod to stand in one place, maybe spend an hour or two clearing out this big feeding envelope of vegetation, take a few steps over to the next side, and do that again. So they've taken in tens of thousands of calories by moving their body very little.
Would this mean that you couldn't have a lot of them living together because they would just eat so much and, you know, compete for food?
Well, it depends on what the base level productivity is in the ecosystem, the phytoproductivity. Yeah. Temperatures in the Mesozoic, especially in the Cretaceous, are high. CO2 levels are high. Plants love this. So you would imagine that plant productivity is really high. Mm. But it's certainly conceivable that they would have had to move from area to area after they denuded the vegetation.
And any place to see this dinosaur in a museum?
I hope so one day. One thing that we have done is we've taken thousands of hours and captured all these bones with a 3D laser scanner. And so we have these 3D models now that could eventually be printed with a 3D laser printer. And of course, you can print these at any scale you want, and you could print them at a one-to-one scale and display them in a museum. It's not really great for big fossils to display the bones themselves. You have to drill them and put bolts in and things like that. Plus, it hampers future science to have them mounted. So I'm hoping that eventually we can display this fossil both in the U.S. and Argentina.
You need a heck of a big museum, too, to put that whole bunch of
Yesterday, when we had the unveiling at Drexel University, my students used painter's tape to put an outline of its body in the floor of the atrium. And this is a very large building, and it took up the entire room.
Wow. So we hope you're going back for more, Dr. Lukavara. So
I will be going back next year.
Good luck to you. We'll talk to you then.
Thank you.
Kenneth Lukavara is an associate professor of paleontology and geology at Drexel University in Philadelphia.